Live from KCUR News, this is Casey Currents on Central Standard, reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. One of Kansas City's biggest Halloween hotspots is, of course, the West Bottoms, where four horrifyingly scary haunted houses attract huge crowds. But they've done a lot more than fill that neighborhood with blood and screams.
If it wasn't for the haunted attractions in the West Bottoms, we would not be having the resurgence that we are today.
Still, some think that the West Bottoms is ready to move past seasonal entertainment. We discuss competing visions for the future of that neighborhood, plus two profiles from KC's undead community, the Zombie Queen, and the lead singer of the 400-year-old band The Haunted Creepies. It's Casey Currents. Listen up just after this hour's news. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Welcome to Casey Currents. We use stories and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. And now we're live, so you can call in and share your thoughts on some of the big issues in our community. In the weeks leading up to Halloween, thousands of people flock to the historic West Bottoms neighborhood to tour Kansas City's haunted houses. And while these houses are known as some of the oldest and most terrifying attractions in the country, you might not know that they've also been major contributors to the development of the former Stockyards District. And as the area develops, some people are wondering what role the haunted houses will play in its future. We want to hear your vision for the West Bottoms. Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or go to KCUR's Facebook page. But before we hear from you, Casey Currents' Esther Honig takes us there.
If you come through the West Bottoms around Halloween, you might recognize this noise. Werewolf Forest is a popular attraction at one of the well-known haunted houses in the West Bottoms. They open for the season every fall during September and October. Screams and heavy metal music can be heard for miles around as patrons wait in line. They pay as much as $30 to enter.
Here they come! Welcome to the Beast!
My guide for the night is Amber Beckwith, a tall, cheerful brunette, and not the sort of person you'd expect behind the scenes of a spooky haunted house. She's the vice president of her family's business, Full Moon Productions. They founded all four haunted houses down here, and she says it all started in 1991.
When we first purchased our building here, what was so interesting is people said, "Oh, you'll never make it down there."
Back when the railroads were a life source for Kansas City, the West Bottoms was an economic hub. But in the early 20th century, a series of floods devastated the area, and by the 50s, it was largely deserted. Then, 40 years later, Full Moon Productions was one of the first businesses to see an opportunity in the historic neighborhood.
The maintenance had been deferred in this area for a long time. A lot of the basic city services were no longer being deployed to this area. And so, you know, when we came down, it was kind of a little bit of a rough time.
Beckwith says that for many years after they moved to the West Bottoms, there was no street sweeping or upkeep on sidewalks. Police rarely patrolled the area. But there were some advantages.
What we were looking for, which is the beautiful architectural structure of these buildings, we couldn't afford to build. And so the buildings possessed all the creativity from the outside that you were looking for to give it that awe, to give it that mysterious feeling as they drive down the 12th Street Bridge.
But in order to assure their success, Beckwith says first they had to work to improve the neighborhood.
One of the biggest elements that we've worked on is doing a lot of the work that the city doesn't have the money or the time to do.
Full Moon Productions helps to maintain city property by leading monthly cleanups, removing weeds, and cleaning off the graffiti.
If it wasn't for the haunted attractions in the West Bottoms, we would not be having the resurgence that we are today.
It's just been a dramatic turnaround.
City Council member Jan Markison has witnessed this transformation.
There were a lot of empty buildings. There were a lot of people who were kind of homesteading in those empty buildings. It's kind of a dangerous place.
Markison cites Full Moon Productions for their collaboration with the city to make sustainable renovations in the area, repairing streets, bridges, and sewers.
They're very, very active in the community, and they have put a lot of investment in there. They have worked tirelessly. They continue in making sure that they get the resources down in the West Bottoms that will help it thrive.
The West Bottoms is resurfacing as a multi-use neighborhood where restaurants, event spaces, galleries, and residential developments are starting to pop up. Not to mention the first weekend antiquing event that includes more than 30 shops.
There are a lot of people who are interested in looking at some of those large buildings, the warehouse buildings, and making lofts. And people have very, very creative ideas. So it's very exciting.
The West Bottoms has become the next frontier in urban development. Some people wonder if the haunted houses will always have a home here as the neighborhood continues to redefine itself. Just a few blocks away, from the top floor of the historic Stockyard building, one man has a different vision.
Directly across the street and right between the Genesee Royale and the Telegram building, between those two, we're going to build a dozen apartment units and some retail space.
My name is Bill Haw, and my real business is ranching and cattle feeding, but a real passion of mine is the restoration of old buildings and reurbanization.
Haw has been involved in West Bottom development for 21 years. He envisions the area will become a multi-use neighborhood for young families.
And I think it's inevitable that residential will play a major role. The wonderful historic buildings there that I think ultimately will become gentrified.
Haw questions whether seasonal businesses like the Haunted Houses or the American Royal will survive gentrification.
It's very important to me that we have consistent year-round activity as opposed to seasonal. I'd really much rather have a consistent, steady flow of activity than a brief spurt of activity.
It's hard to predict what will become of the West Bottoms. There are so many empty buildings and promising ideas for development. Amber Beckwith from the Haunted Houses hopes they will be around to see those changes.
By looking at the history of what the haunted attractions have done for the West Bottoms, I think it would definitely be very sad to see them go away. Now, will all four be able to sustain themselves for another 10 years? I can't predict that.
Like Beckwith, we're all curious to know what's next for the West Bottoms. For Casey Currents, I'm Esther Honig.
And we're back in the studio now with some guests who have some different perspectives on the future of the West Bottoms. Does it include the haunted houses, artist lofts, galleries, crazy antiquing weekends? Does it even include the American Royal? We'd like to hear your thoughts at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or on KCUR's Facebook page. Here with us now is Vladimir Kirstich with the Kansas City Design Center, an organization that explores local development alternatives. He researched the West Bottoms 2 years ago as part of a project with the city. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Rachel McMeachin, a longtime resident of the West Bottoms who recently moved away. Rachel teaches aerial performance with the group Vole and also runs the arts group Dr. Sketchies. It wasn't your loft in the West Bottoms, right?
Yes.
Is it still there?
It's still there.
And so how long did you live there, Rachel?
I moved into that neighborhood, I want to say 97.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you there?
The space. The space, the community. At that time, it was pretty much exclusively artists and galleries and studio spaces, and that's what I was looking for, something that was wide open, that we could just create what we wanted out of it. And, it was definitely the feeling of the people that we were all kind of pioneering the spaces.
And did you see it similarly to what we just heard? This, the people from the haunted house, there are these beautiful spaces and but not much city investment?
Yeah, absolutely. The landlord that I had actually would hire off-duty cops to come and patrol the area for us so that we would have some sense of security, especially during the haunted house seasons when tons and tons of people would just descend on the neighborhood. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of wide open to do with the spaces as we wanted.
Hmm. And how safe did you feel like it was there? Because I know that that's been constantly a question back then and still now.
I felt just perfectly safe. I knew all of my neighbors. I knew all of the people in my building and the surrounding buildings. And sometimes I would get calls, you know, it's like, hey, is that your car out there? Your lights are on. Like, it was very much everybody looking out for each other. There's a large homeless contingency down there. So sometimes you'd see people just kind of sitting and waiting to jump on trains and whatnot. But it was all very light. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a scary feel to it. I mean, it's very dark. It seems very abandoned. But there are people in all of those buildings.
And do you feel like that's changed?
The change has come in the amount of people that are coming down there, specifically with the antique malls. Mm-hmm. Right. So that first weekend of every month, suddenly we don't have parking. Everybody's being really rude, very entitled, coming through our homes. Like, I'd actually have people walking in my front door thinking it was a shop. You know, it's like, mm-mm.
Well, I remember when I went down there for the first time, one of those antiquing weekends, I was blown away just by how many people and how many stores had suddenly cropped up. I mean, Esther Honig just told us it's more than 30 shops that have now. Mm-hmm. And I think that just in the past 1 or 2 years that they've opened. I want to bring Vladimir Kirstich into the conversation. What brought your study of the West Bottoms area? Why was the city, and why were you interested in looking at that district?
Well, it was really the community, which is Central Industrial District Association and City Industrial Council, who approached us, and we had a conversation about looking at the development of the area and future possibilities, because Greater Downtown Area Plan, which was put in place in 2008, had addressed the area, but only in a marginal sense, and there was a community of stakeholders who wanted to have some further look and explore the possibilities of the development. And that's how we started to discuss with them the possibility of taking on the project and then doing the urban vision study for the area.
And we just heard the perspective of two of the big players in that area, the haunted houses and Bill Haw, who owns a lot of real estate down there. Did what you heard ring true to what you have seen in that area?
Well, Full Moon Productions and actual Bill Haw were part of our stakeholder group that we worked with, and all of them have been part of a conversation, a discussion, a year-long process of developing the project. So we have incorporated and considered their input and their ideas and their aspirations for the areas, for the area itself. But I think West Bottoms is probably one of the more genuine parts of Kansas City that holds tremendous promise for future development. But also with that comes the challenge how it can be developed in a genuine and authentic way without being gentrified. And in doing so, actually, I do believe there is a room, an aspect, and possibility for these different aspirations. It doesn't have to become one solution that fits everybody, but actually allow for heterogeneous development that can actually bring a totally new quality to the quality of urban living in Kansas City that doesn't exist at the moment.
That's interesting. You use that word gentrified, that as we don't want it to become gentrified. I think that's such a loaded word, maybe means different things to different people. Like, what does it mean to you?
It means that there's no need to displace all of the existing functions in order to bring some new development possibilities. So as we looked at the area, we looked at what we call the idea of strategic development and critical intervention, believing that some of industry still can stay in the area and continue to thrive because it's one of the major transportation hubs, and that's part of the life of the city and part of its attraction and grittiness that is good, as well as, I believe, haunted houses that are part of the character of the area. So there are parts that can undergo development and be changed, but there are parts that also can remain as they are. I think one of the untapped possibilities there is really the disconnection between the city and the river, which was the point of the origin of the city, and we have lost that link. Mm-hmm. And I think there's tremendous opportunity actually to reconnect with both rivers and also especially the backside of Stockyards building, there is tremendous opportunity to turn this into a recreational area and connect it with the Kemper Arena, which at this point is really kind of underutilized, and create possibly a new recreational hub and sports hub that city doesn't have. And rather than have people traveling out of the city to recreate, they come to the city to discover what city holds.
That's something that Bill Haw mentioned, that idea of repurposing Kemper Arena to make it into a sports hub. I know there's also been talk of just tearing it down, which is another question, now that the Sprint Arena took over a lot of its activities. Can you just give us the lay of the land? What are the different parts of what we call the West Bottoms?
Well, the West Bottoms, most distinct separation or parts are the north area, which is the north side of 12th Street Bridge, and south area, which is the south area of 12th Street Bridge. They, if you look at urban stock, the buildings themselves, they're two very distinct areas. Once when they took down Stockyards, the only thing that remaining is really Kemper Arena and Stockyards building of significant structures. Everything else is kind of more broken down urban fabric. The north side of 12th Street Bridge are really very important, significant, and architecturally very valid warehouses, structures that create much denser urban environments. Obviously, there's a difference between the two. The other thing I would point out is what's different than any other part of the city. There's a tremendous presence of infrastructure such as viaducts and bridges, off and on ramps, which in an unusual way create an urban environment that you can't find anywhere else in the city, which I think create a very interesting potential for development of what is now totally underutilized land.
And I want to bring it back to kind of life in the West Bottoms, Rachel. I wonder, this Halloween season is the time that a lot of people in the city, it's the only time they might go down there for the haunted houses. Mm-hmm. But from the perspective of a resident, what was this time of year like?
We found alternative routes to getting home. Yeah, there are back ways into the West Bottoms, so we would stay off of 12th Street. We would avoid, you know, all of the traffic and all of the people and kind of wandering sightseers. It generally brought in a type of crowd that was, I don't know.
I'd like to call it a party crowd?
Yeah, I like to call them, you know, the suburban teenage set that, you know, was just looking to blow off steam. That's when most of the vandalism would happen. Our cars would get broken into. So the majority of the issues we were having exclusively October.
Mm-hmm. Are there, do you feel like there are some divisions between some of these different big players in the area that kind of play out?
Like you're talking about
the haunted houses and the antique houses, that as a resident, you had some issues with the crowds coming down there. But for many people, that's a wonderful thing. It's development. It's people coming to the area and spending money and enjoying it.
Well, the haunted houses were pre-existing. So it was one of those things I moved in and knew that's what I was getting into. And there is a sense of kind of a romantic quality to the West Bottoms being totally empty and the sound of the Howling Wolves or the Vincent Price laugh just echoing off of the buildings. You know, it was creepy, eerie, and, you know, enjoyable for what it was in that small little time frame. And again, because it was a small little time frame, there's just allowances that you make in your standard of living. And like I said, we'd find alternative routes to get home so we didn't have to encounter the crowds. The antiquing stuff was new. Like that just came up in the last couple of years. And for me, I felt like that, you know, old lady on the porch. It's like, hey, kids, get off my lawn, you know, because suddenly we have thousands of people just in the neighborhood and creating congestion. Like if I wanted to get out and go shopping myself, like going to the grocery store, I couldn't get out of the West Bottoms. It would take me 40 minutes to deal with the crowds.
Now, we do have a caller right now, Chris from the West Bottoms calling, who owns one of those antique shops. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I wonder if you share your perspective on sort of how that antiquing event has changed the West Bottoms.
Well, I call it the collective consciousness. We are in the Central Bag Company, which I was a little surprised by the demographic that was given earlier, because there's some beautiful warehouses south of 12th Street, and we're one of them. So maybe he meant south of 14th. But anyway, it has been an exciting and very amazing transformation down here. We own Pete and Repeat Repurpose and the Central Bag Company. And it's not just the 30 businesses they reference, but within each one of those, they have a number of vendors and artists. Like, we've got like 50.
And you have 50 just within yours.
Yes, we're 12,000 square feet down here.
Wow.
And, but, you know, that's not uncommon. There's other ones down here as well that, that host a number of artists, a number of repurposers and antiquers. And this is no longer just, you know, coming down and buying an old antique dresser. I mean, the artistry down here is phenomenal. And these are hundreds of people that are down here every single day. I'm sitting here right now, and there's and people are out decorating and cleaning and having fun. And like I said, the collective consciousness down here has been phenomenal. Now, my store is directly across the street from the Beast. You guys keep talking about the Beast. It is hysterically funny, by the way. I think it's hysterical.
The Beast is one of those haunted houses.
Yes, and the kids are adorable. I think they're absolutely adorable. My BMW has been parked here until 10, 11 o'clock at night, every single night since the 1st of October, because we work a lot. And I've never seen a thing.
Now, have you seen that there is some conflict maybe with residents who just maybe moved there before there was such a huge influx? I should point out this weekend is the antiquing weekend there in the West Bottoms, right?
Oh, it is. And you know, and we're benefit, our whole benefit this weekend is for the American Cancer Society. So, I mean, this is graduated up into bigger and bigger leagues of people who really come out and support the inner city, but support this area and have embraced it and love it.
But what about the residents there who weren't used to hearing all those, having all those people there?
Well, you know, it's done by 6 o'clock at night. You know, as far as the antiquing is concerned, I come in and out of here all day throughout the day, you know, depending on whether or not I have to go pick up another case of water or, you know, whatever. I'm not experiencing the same congestion that she's talking about. Parking, they have been keeping up on it. They've been opening new lots. The city just came down here and paved all the streets. They put in new sidewalks. They improved the sewers.
Well, Chris, thank you for your call. We just need to continue the conversation, but I really appreciate your perspective. Call in 816-235-2888, or you can comment on KCUR's Facebook page to talk about what brings you down to the West Bottoms or what you'd like to see in that area. You're listening to KC Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Later this hour, hear an exclusive interview with the lead singer of a band from Transylvania. They've been together for 400 years, but have been performing in the KC area for only about 20. But right now, we're talking about the future of the West Bottoms with urban planner Vladimir Kirstich and former resident Rachel McMeachin. I wonder, Vladimir, if you could talk a little bit about what you're hearing. These are some of the players, the haunted houses, right, the artist residents, the antique shop owners. But there's other players involved here that maybe are not so obvious to us because there's those industries that people don't go down there to see.
Right. Well, let me first thank Chris for correcting me. Yeah, she's absolutely right. I meant 14th Street right at 12th Street Bridge. Yes, there are some beautiful buildings on the south side of 12th Street Bridge, so I stand to correct myself. There's a lot of industries. You know, if you think about Faultless Starch Company, that has been the resident of the area for many, many years, and they're one of the really staying businesses that made the difference in the area, and there's a number of others who together with them, have been critical for the life that's being bred now into the place. And one thing that's important to recognize is that both Central Industrial District Association and the Kansas City Industrial Council, together with a number of other stakeholders, have worked tirelessly over the years, actually, to secure the funds with the city to improve infrastructure. And over last, let's say, 10 years, there have been significant infrastructural improvements that have actually allowed for the development that is taking place today. And that, in some sense, are invisible players and those who are behind the scenes who have helped, actually, the boom that might be happening now. And I think they also have vested interest in seeing the future development and improvement of the area, and we still have a long ways to go before it all is brought on a level of really a thriving urban environment in which the amenities are at par with other parts of the city.
What do you see? Do you see it really having a potential as a residential area?
Yes, for those who like that kind of environment. And I think, obviously, there's a question of some kind of mentality shift and who will find their place in the area. As we looked at the plan and studied the area, we made certain in our plans to suggest development of significant green zones so they can offset some of industrial installations there that might be less than desirable as a neighborhood for residential development. But at the same time, I think what West Bottoms promises and offers is really this kind of the vitality of the city where we don't have this kind of exclusion and segregation of different kind of aspects of life of the city, but they all come together to create an interesting environment that you cannot find anywhere else. But so I do believe, first of all, there's a lot of interesting building stock that can be easily converted into really attractive urban housing and loft buildings. And also, there's a lot of vacant land that allows for future development and creation of new housing developments in the area that absolutely is possible and desirable, I would say.
Kansas City, have you seen the West Bottoms change over the years? What's great about the neighborhood and what's it missing? Call in 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at kccurrents@kcr.org or go to KCR's Facebook page. Rachel McMeachin, I wonder, what would be your vision for what the West Bottoms should look like?
That's kind of a hard question to answer. I mean, I had my vision and I had my time in the West Bottoms. I was there definitely during this Renaissance period, and it wasn't for me. It did chase me out.
It wasn't for you after it developed, or it was, I mean,
yeah, the development. Yeah, the development stuff is kind of what pushed me out because I liked having my community. I liked having my neighborhood. I liked having the space. I liked having the freedom. And the minute there were 30 photographers on any nice day on my front porch taking wedding and senior photos and like the way the place became a tourist zone for most people, I felt a little encroached upon, like I needed just emotionally a little bit of more space, which the place had given me prior to that. Huh. And that's just, that was my need. I needed more room just for my physical being and for my emotional, like, creative self. And the rest of my friends down there that were kind of pioneering the areas as well, like the theater groups and the art galleries, all started packing up and moving out. You know, in that 2 to 3 year span before I did too. So there started to become an exodus, which is where I see the gentrification happening because the artists were leaving, you know, the theater groups were leaving, the venues and the underground musician, you know, spaces were going away. And then it was just making room for the people with the SUVs to come in.
At the same time, we see more galleries opening and maybe a different set moving in. I wonder, how do you see, is that a typical story, really, on artists leading the way in development that happens sort of around the country, Vladimir?
Well, we can speak specifically about Kansas City here. I would say if you look at a recent history of urban redevelopment of Kansas City, it was really the artists who first occupied the areas and found them just because of low rent. Affordable and desirable, and they were the first that moved into Crossroads area, and over the years, they were the ones who really led the transformation development of the area. Now, there is still some number of galleries and artists who live in the area, but some of those who are more inclined, like Rachel, to look for a zone that allows them more freedom and the way in which they can actually structure their life, urban life, they have moved years ago to West Bottoms, and indeed, some of them have moved away, but there's some who are coming back as a second wave who want to stay on and try to stake their own place there and change. And I think what's important to realize, the city has a life, it changes, transforms, and it is going to take different incarnations. But at the same time, I think it's really also it's critical to recognize how it's not only one thing that gives life to the city, but many different things, and how we provide an opportunity for coexistence of these things and recognize their value in promoting and moving forward the development, while, once again, I'll stress, retaining some sense of authenticity and genuinity to the place itself.
Oh. And when you talk about coexisting, I wonder specifically in Esther Honig's piece we heard at the beginning of the show, talked about these that several of the tenants of sort of the Rest Bottoms are seasonal activities,
right.
The haunted houses, and the American Royal particularly.
Right.
Is there space for that and more year-round, day-to-day activity?
Sure. I think if you look at a city, any city has its own festival, has its own seasons. I mean, it's kind of an inherent part of urban life, of our life, collective life. And I think this is where we celebrate certain things if they're not terribly commercialized. And I think, yes, it is part of the nature, original nature, well, or inherited nature of West Bottoms. Then when nobody lived there, there are certain events like haunted houses or American Royal barbecue that brought some life to the area, and then subsequently was vacated and left to abandon for periods of months. But that, in my mind, still does not exclude the possibility of something that becomes more permanent form of urban life, housing people moving into the area. What we looked into and what we tried to suggest is that these events actually should find its place in the city rather than being apart from the city, meaning the part of the West Bottoms. So, for instance, American Royal Barbecue is really happening around Kemper Arena. It's kind of behind the fence because it's a controlled event. I think it would be quite different, as we suggested, if that event actually extends into the city and takes over the city for the period of the time. Huh. So the city starts to live through that. I mean, when I say city, I mean West Bottoms. So I don't think it's either or. That these events can have significance to the area. They become part of its own tradition, while at the same time then exclude the possibility of some kind of permanent and continuous urban life that is still lacking. It should happen there.
So it would happen throughout perhaps locations in the West Bottoms,
right.
And other parts of Kansas City too?
Eventually, yes.
Interesting. Are there a couple of key decisions that need to be made as the West Bottoms develops?
Yeah, I think, as I said before, what we propose is what we call these critical interventions. As such, for instance, I think at this point there is no clear pedestrian north-south connection between north end of West Bottoms to the south end. It's really, if you want to walk as a pedestrian, it's not really in a friendly area. There's nothing that allows you to inhabit the city. Many people come, park their cars, walk short distance, get back in a car and drive to a different location. And I think really improving the streetscape and developing actually these kind of major pedestrian arteries would be one of the critical elements. Second, appropriating some of these spontaneously used spaces now into kind of more formal public spaces and green zones that start to become this kind of focal parts of the area which are associated with certain kind of activities would really kind of bring an order to the area, which at this point doesn't exist or is kind of spontaneously developed. And then also, I don't think that the whole area has to be developed overnight or it could not be developed overnight, but just kind of to do these couple of strategic interventions which would allow actually then the spontaneous life to take on and start to connect some of these things. And finally, there are two other things that I think are really critical. One, really connection to the river. And the other one is the underside of the I-70 viaduct, which is now partially it's part of the trail system, but also it's a tremendous space that could allow really direct connection between, if properly urbanized, direct connection between KCK and actually River Market, which would be another interesting kind of way in which this area becomes tied into a larger urban order.
How does that vision sound to you, Rachel, I wonder, as a former resident who feels a connection to the area?
I love that underside of the I-70 bridge. I mean, it's beautiful, again, in kind of that post-apocalyptic way that I find beautiful. And I also agree, green spaces. I had dogs, and that was kind of one of the most complicated things. There were three grassy little spots that I could walk to when I'm walking my dogs, and you know, I did miss having some sort of a an ability to do maybe a community garden or, you know, something to make it even homier, like, because it was home and I loved the space, but I missed having a connection with Earth.
Rachel, where did you move to?
I moved over to Kansas City, Kansas, over in Strawberry Hill. So, like, literally 2 minutes from my loft, I can see Kemper Arena.
Huh, interesting. And Vladimir Kristich, I wonder if you could tell me, why do you think the development of this region is important to Kansas City?
Well, you know, Greater Downtown Area Plan, which is really one of the most ambitious and more comprehensive visions that really kind of recognizes the importance of urban living and significance of the downtown area, includes West Bottoms. And I would say downtown, we cannot talk about downtown without talking about West Bottoms. Somehow geographically, because of the lay of the land, it's kind of an invisible part of the downtown. But at the same time, I think that part of the city embodies the character that maybe downtown itself doesn't have in terms of the building stocks, something that really has this kind of the feel of the true city that connects it to its own past. And the other thing which is really, really important, part of the character of Kansas City, its geographic character, is part of its identity, are two rivers. And we are really not properly connected to these two rivers. So I think there's tremendous opportunity to bring city to its own kind of source and reconnect it to its original place, and not in any kind of nostalgic, historic way, but in something that really can give it a character that at this point it's not having. It would be a tremendous compliment if you would have well-developed urban area in the loop itself that connects to the West Bottoms or 12th Street Bridge or some of those, and have really something that really possesses the character that is unmatched by any other city in the region.
Let me ask you quickly, just connected to that, what we got an email from Dwight. What is the likelihood that that area would suffer another devastating flood and risk slowing development?
I think a lot has been done with the levee system, and actually, as far as in our research have shown, is that area actually is pretty well protected, and levees go through the certification. And one of the critical aspects of ULI study, Rose Fellowship grant study, was really kind of focusing on that, trying to consider that issue. And I think at this point, that kind of fear of flood potential of that flood is not necessarily imminent. It's not something that really kind of in any way negatively influences the possibility of future development of the area.
Well, thank you so much. I want to thank our guests. We had a couple more callers who we didn't get a chance to get to, but Vladimir Kristich with the Kansas City Design Center, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And Rachel McMeachin, a former resident of the West Bottoms who recently moved out. She teaches aerial performance with the group Volet. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up after the break, meet Kansas City's Zombie Queen and the lead singer of the Haunted Creepies. This is KC Currents. This is KC Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Twice a year, Kansas City is overrun with a Halloween favorite, zombies. Earlier this month, they walked the streets as part of the Kansas City Zombie Walk, a charity event which collected over a ton of food for the hungry and homeless. The Zombie Walk has been doing charity events since 2008. The organization's president is Kansas City native Paige Turner. Her character, the Zombie Queen, walks on stilts and gets a lot of attention from children and adults alike. KC Current's Susan Wilson visited the headquarters of the Zombie Queen to find out more about her.
This is my makeup kit. It's chucked full, and the first thing you see when you open it is my severed hand.
Being Zombie Queen isn't all glamour. It takes a lot of work. In her Hyde Park home, Paige Turner reveals the tools and tricks that turn her into undead royalty.
I put the black one in my left eye because my character got attacked on my left arm, and the story of my character was I rotted from the left to the right. And so
everywhere the eye settles at Paige Turner's house, there's a curiosity to see, like the huge spray of peacock feathers encircling her living room ceiling light fixture. In the corner, a mannequin ready to try out Zombie Queen clothing. And there are skulls, a flower planter crawling with black rubber mice, countless eerie paintings, and sculptural oddities. As you might guess, Paige Turner is a Halloween lifer with a love for costumes and horror that goes back to early childhood.
Oh, man, I put together the most ridiculous pieces of clothing to form wizards and witches, and I loved being a pirate. Like, I loved trying to be as authentic as an 8-year-old could. I did half man and half woman for several years. I loved putting together the half suit, half dress costume. I loved it.
So you mean you actually put that together yourself, or you had help when you were younger?
I remember doing it by myself. I'm sure my mom helped me, but in my head, I did it by myself. I did most of the sewing alone and cutting it up alone. And if there was something that was too complicated, she'd step in and help. But I put the buttons on, I sewed it together, I pieced it together and made it work.
Fast forward, how did you become Zombie Queen?
Well, seeing as how I love Halloween, and I really started getting into special effects makeup when I lived in Alaska, I attended my first zombie walk in Alaska before I came back here.
So then how did you hook up with this walk here?
I had learned about it and, of course, needed some kind of outlet for my costume making and my makeup. And I went to my first zombie walk shortly after I moved here and just fell in love with it and the people and made friends with the woman who actually started it in 2008.
So if I might ask, what does the Zombie Queen do at an event like that?
Well, I was lucky enough to pick a crew that runs the show for me. I spend several months leading up to the zombie walk, planning it, coordinating it, and getting the volunteers in line. I'll break it down by area, by minutes sometimes. I'll let people know at 1 o'clock you need to be here, at 1:15 you'll need to be there. And I break it down and have meetings with my crew so that the day of, it runs so smoothly that I can interact with the people who are making this possible.
So as you're walking, what's your shtick? What do you actually do?
Well, I'm the zombie who always smiles and talks to people. I am the one who breaks my character all the time just because of my personality. And so when I'm heading up a line and I see people getting really into it, if they ask me questions, I'll tell them about it. If they don't ask questions, I'll get into character and reach at them and I'll do the zombie moan and I'll shuffle. I kind of, whoever is in front of me is how I will react. The other 500 people behind me, they shuffle and moan and stay in character the whole time.
When you're staying in character, what do you do?
The last several years I've been on stilts. I actually designed last year's dress to fit over my stilts and to go down to the ground while I was on my stilts. So when I'm on my stilts, I tend to just reach, moan, say brains. I tend to try to yell across the street because I want to get people across the street involved in some way, so I like to get everyone worked up.
Digging deeper into our makeup kit, Turner shows more zombification secrets.
One of my favorite things, I will make my veins look dead, kind of similar to what a varicose vein looks like, real dark purple, but I'll have that on my face, on my neck, on my arms, and I use purple eyeliner from the Dollar General or from a beauty supply place.
So what reactions do you get to your Zombie Queen character?
I get probably every reaction in the world. It's great. I have people saying things like, do your own makeup? And I do. Where did you get your dress? And I actually had an 8th grader message me and says she said, you know, I don't know you and you don't know me, but I want to say I look up to you and I want to be a makeup artist when I grow up. And I just love seeing what you can do. And that just makes me feel great. I mean, I make myself look undead and I've inspired people. So that's kind of a really cool thing for me.
So when you're in total Zombie Queen character, what part of you are you channeling?
Me? I really love just entertaining the public, and I love reactions, and I love mixed reactions. I like to scare people. I like to make people laugh. I like to make people inspired or fascinated, and I really just feed off of whatever comes at me.
What's the most surprising reaction you've gotten from your Zombie Queen?
My favorite reaction that I'll never forget was I was working a Halloween event, and I was walking down the block. It's an event called Scare at Halloween. It's kind of like a safe zone for kids to go to. And I had scared a girl who was probably about 7. And usually when I scare kids, I get my voice up and I'm like, oh, it's okay, it's fake. And I let them touch my makeup and I get really, I get down on their level so they know that I'm not a threat, and I try to get them out of it. She got scared though, but before I can get down there, her little brother, who was maybe 4, drew his sword and he protected his sister with every ounce of his self. And so I naturally was terrified because he was about to just take me down, and he chased me probably 10 or 20 feet to get away from his sister, and that was the best reaction I've ever had.
Before I left, Paige Turner offered a close-up look at this year's masterpiece, the Zombie Queen gown. The gown is made out of 3 kinds of black tattered fabric, accented in red. It's long enough to go over the stilts she wears to make quite an impression at the zombie walk.
And then there's the black netting.
Mm-hmm. The tulle.
Mm-hmm. The tulle, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That's kind of torn here and there.
Yes. I was a big fan of the lighter with all of this. I burnt a lot of it for effect of aging. And I actually fused the sleeve of the tulle to the wound on my arm. So it looks like I've been in the dress and I've rotted with the dress.
I'll be darned.
Paige Turner is Kansas City's Zombie Queen and president of the Kansas City Zombie Walk, a nonprofit that collects food for the hungry and the homeless.
Almost every year around this time in Kansas City, a musical phenomenon rises up at area bars. The Haunted Creepies claim to be a 400-year-old band from Transylvania. Against my better judgment, I sat down with one of these undead musicians, not to be mistaken with the zombies.
Well, zombie is a corpse that has come back to life and is fairly robotic, almost an automaton, if you will, with only one thing to do, which is eat brains. Well, now, I'm not necessarily going to turn down a good, slice of brain. But no, I am not an automaton. I am the Haunted Creepy from Transylvania.
But you have no head.
This is true. Yet, something holds the shape of my hood. It's one of those things your mortal mind could not possibly comprehend.
The lead singer of the Haunted Creepies wears a purple robe and a hood with a black netting that covers what seems like a face. He won't reveal his identity, but he does tell me his name.
I am he who bought the farm.
When did you buy the farm?
In the early 1600s, unfortunately. It was a grisly affair.
His bandmates?
Vladimir Hambone, Sausage von Devil Horse, and of course, Gorlock Wormwood. Mama don't allow no skiffle haunt around here. Mama don't allow no skiffle haunting around here. Well, I don't care what mama don't allow, gonna haunt that skiffle in the old house. Mama don't allow no skiffle haunt around here.
Since they've been performing for hundreds of years, He Who Bought the Farm says the Haunted Creepies have a repertoire too vast to get into here. But like any good band leader, he knows how to answer the genre question.
Generally, we consider it to be high-energy rock and roll from beyond the grave. Although we have ventured into some side genres, a bit of country with Phantom 309, perhaps the occasional taste of what you mortals call jazz music when we do Artie Shaw's Nightmare. But primarily, we keep it at the 145. Rock and roll, good times, dig it, baby.
Grafted from the DNA of the common tomato, and the DNA of the North American Sasquatch, which your mortal science so amusingly denies.
How did you surface in Kansas City, of all places?
There are some things that your mortal mind cannot possibly comprehend, and this is one of them.
Did you go into
a sort of period of repose and then come back in the mid-90s in Kansas City? Or have you just been throughout playing since the 1600s?
I see you have done your homework. You see, the mid-90s is roughly the period where the recurrence of the Kansas City appearances began. Prior to that, we had been playing all around the world.
The first report we can uncover of a local haunted creepies appearance dates back to 1995. They often crop up around Halloween or on Friday the 13th at the Brick, Davies, Uptown Ramblers, or the Riot Room. But they've been known to perform as far away as Staffelstein, Germany in recent years. There seems to be some kind of connection between the haunted creepies and the human bands Cretan 66, the Buddy Lush phenomenon, and Plaid Iris. But he who bought the farm flatly dismisses these connections as ludicrous rumors. Is there any time that people can look forward to hearing you in the Kansas City area again?
There is no set time necessarily, but I will warn you that there is a Friday the 13th in December.
Well, he, can I call you he?
Well, may I call you Sylvia?
Sure. He, thank you so much for joining us on KC Current.
Thank you for having me, Sylvia.
That's it for KC Currents today. Our live broadcast is now every Thursday morning. If you missed part of the show, want to hear it again, or subscribe to the podcast, check out our page at kcur.org. Contact us at kccurrents@kcur.org or on Twitter at kccurrents. Central Standard returns tomorrow with The Food Critics. Next on Up to Date, hear about the dead that stay dead and the funeral business. Today's KC Currents was produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Alex Smith, and Susan Wilson. Our interns are Esther Honig, Ross Steinmetz, and Sydney Llewellyn. Theme music is by Approach. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, and this is KCUR.